from HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 138, recorded live Wednesday, November 12th, 2008. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. Support is also provided by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Rick Brewster, author of Paint.NET.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'm sitting here with Rick Brewster, author of Paint.NET, the man, the legend, Paint.NET, the only application to have crushed Paintbrush. How's it going, Rick? Thanks for chatting with me today.
Yeah, thanks. It's going pretty good.
So, how did this happen? How did you decide, how did you guys decide to make a Paint application?
Oh, well, it started my last semester of college at Washington State University. We were doing a senior design project, and one of the projects we got was from Microsoft to say, hey, why don't we do a Paint program using GDI Plus? And so we had a mentor attached to it that helped us kind of go through the process of setting up requirements and doing some design stuff and implementing it, making sure we had an actual professional quality product with things like documentation. And then after that, I just kind of ran with it on my own and did some updates, and there was another set of kids back at Wazoo that I actually mentored through a version 2 release of it, including Tom Jackson, who's also here at Microsoft now. And then we just kept running with it since then and doing improvements, especially based on what the community kept asking for, you know, things like gradients or, you know, a special curve tool, et cetera, or all tool, features that were community or based on community feedback.
How much of the process is plowing forward, just kind of pushing yourself forward, even though the code doesn't feel right, versus looking back, refactoring, and saying, well, we really can't do, you know, feature B until we change the plugin model?
Oh, that's a pretty big question. There are sometimes when there's a small feature that we can implement that gets us a lot of sort of bang for the buck. For example, when I implemented the ability for the line tool to also draw curves, that was a pretty simple one. The gradient tool was also a simple one where we just added in using the existing architecture. But then there is also sort of this huge swath of features that we've been putting off for a really long time because the architecture of Paint.NET doesn't support it in a clean way, or at least in a way where, you know, we'd have to implement a lot of stuff, you know, say in three different ways. And then if we wanted to redo that architecture in a better way, we'd have to re-implement those three things anyway. So, it's kind of a hard question to ask because there's a lot of features that actually have, you know, I've been putting off until, I guess, the, you know, now approaching mythical status version 4.0, which is going to have, you know, every feature under the sun, of course. At least it's getting that reputation.
And the whole thing's written in C#, right? Is there any C++?
It is mostly C#. There is some C or C++ for, there's a shell extension which handles things like thumbnails in Explorer for the native .pdm file type. There's a clipping library for polygons called GPC, which is also written in, actually, I guess it's mostly C. And then there's a library called Squish, which the DDS, which stands for Direct Draw Surface, uses that for decoding and encoding of that DDS file format, which is something that they use for games and the XNA in the Xbox development stuff a lot.
Now, you know, now that 7's coming out, Windows 7's coming out, do you feel pressure to ribbonize it and make your app look pretty on 7? Because I've installed it on 7, and it, you know, it doesn't quite have that gloss.
I do get people asking me to put a ribbon in there pretty much all the time, but it's something you have to approach carefully in order to avoid what's called the cargo cult mentality, where you think, oh, well, if I just add a ribbon, it'll be better. Are you familiar with the cargo cult metaphor?
I am. Cargo cult programming.
Right. So it's kind of, you know, related back to that, I think it was, you know, back in World War II where the natives on an island had an abandoned airstrip and they decided to go out there and do kind of the air traffic controller hand signs, but then the planes with food and supplies did not come. So,
Well, I think that the ribbon is an interesting thing because it's more of a, people think of it as being a feature that you just slap in, but really it's supposed to be a usability improvement. But if you just take the existing menus and toolbars and ribbonize them, you aren't necessarily improving usability. You're just adding a ribbon. So I'm sure that there's going to be a lot of thought about the user's workflow and how they live inside of paint.net that you're going to need to think about. Otherwise, you're going to make a lot of people angry.
Exactly. It can't just be, you know, a reshuffling of the UI. It has to actually be something that, because in Office, they put in a whole lot of thought in terms of, they put a whole lot of thought into the workflow and the feature accessibility and how they organize stuff. It wasn't just, you know, removing the menus and dropping those into tabs on the ribbon. It was a much more intricate process.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about that I like about paint.net as that I think stands out is its setup process. I think that it's got an extraordinarily clean setup. It doesn't appear that you're using the standard kind of MSI setup.exe that pops out of, you know, Visual Studio. You know, I've always kind of found that the fact that two files pop out, both an MSI and an exe, to be a little confusing. But paint.net has always been, if you've got .net on your machine, it's always pretty easy to install. How much work are you putting into the setup application?
There's actually been quite a lot of work that's been put into there. I can do a little bit of history on the installer if you want me to start with that.
Please, yes.
Okay. So originally, paint.net was just distributed as an MSI, which was generated from Visual Studio Setup Wizard project. And, you know, you kind of create it in Visual Studio, you point it towards your main executable, and it figures out the dependencies and creates the MSI. You tell it the product name and the default installation directory, and then you're kind of done. And this works great for a lot of simple projects. But as paint.net grew, I needed to do more things with my installer. One of those was localization. And this is kind of difficult to do, at least in a way that's integrated with the whole rest of the localization. It's difficult to do with the built-in setup wizard. You can't just, it doesn't have access to the same strings pool, et cetera. So I wrote my own setup wizard, which then p-invokes into the Windows installer DLL, MSI.dll, to run the MSI, which is still built with the setup wizard project inside of the studio. The other thing that had to be dealt with was doing updates. And this was something that, I don't know if you've worked with building MSIs or building MSPs, but I read through a lot of the documentation and was unable to really figure out how to do them or how to do them correctly or to get some good examples online. So I decided that the update process for paint.net was just going to be uninstall and then reinstall. And the setup wizard is written in C#, and so it also gives me complete control over the user experience. For example, if I wanted to do like a WPF version of the installer, I could do that, and it would be a pretty cool experience, but it might not be necessary. And the other thing that you kind of get with installers is that once it works, you kind of don't want to touch it that much. So, you know, the fact, you know, like I said, I'm still using the built-in setup wizard project in Visual Studio, and that's kind of an artifact of the fact that it works, so I'm not going to touch it, and it's not really something that affects the user experience, so it's not a priority to change that.
Now, I just took, as we were talking just now, I just took paint.net 3.36, and I ran it, and it prompted me for an update. It said, hey, there's a new version. And no, I had something else, like 3.35. It said 3.36. I hit install. Paint.net shut down, and the installer went. It removed the old version and installed the new version. And now it wants to restart my computer. Why is that?
I'm not sure. There's probably something
that's part of the built-in MSI experience, because there's the cool paint.net setup thing on the outside. There's that white dialog that says paint.net is being installed that you then call out, like you said, into the MSI. At that point, you don't really have a lot of control. Like, it wants to reboot, but I have no way of knowing why, right?
Right. It's probably the standard. There was some system file that's locked, or maybe it was installing probably just a system file that was locked that it was trying to update or something.
Mm-hmm. What did you write the little outside part in? Like right now it says optimizing performance for your system. This is when you call NGen, right?
That's the other thing that needed to be in the installer that was, you can do it as part of the MSI, but the user experience isn't quite the same.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as integrated. You know, it just ends up being as, you know, another block on the progress bar where it's just point I can actually call it out and say, hey, I'm doing something that might take a minute and here's what it is. And, you know, the user gets a little more information about it.
And what did you write the setup part, the wrapper part in? That's in C++?
That setup wizard UI, it's in C#. It uses WinForms.
Really?
Yeah. And that actually kind of, you know, segues into the whole, you know, bootstrapper or chainer that I use that has to detect .NET before you can install paint.NET. And that actually significantly impacts the setup experience for paint.NET.
All right, so this is where it's getting interesting. People may have lost a couple of people there because I'm jumping around here. But let's start at the beginning. You download, you go to your site, you go to getpaint.net, and you hit download, and you bring down this zip file. It's like a meg and a half. It takes no time at all. And inside the zip file is an executable. And when you run that executable, you know, you get the little prompt, and it's signed. There's a digital signature there, right?
Yep.
Because you've gone to the work of getting a cert from somebody, and you've signed that executable. So when you get the little complaint from Vista, it's actually a nice complaint because it says, oh, well, this is really from .pdn LLC. This is from the corporation, right?
Yes.
So you have signed what at that point?
So the way that works is I purchased a signing certificate from, I think it was Komodo. And then you install it into your local certificate store and you give it the right name. And then I have some batch files as part of my build process where I actually set some environment variables that say, you know, sign PDN is 1 or 0, because it does add some time to the build process. Mm-hmm. And then it either, you know, it signs the file with, you know, the correct name in there and the correct certificate, which is stored in the local certificate store.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to do that for, you know, the outer wrapper, the inner setup exe, and a couple other things.
Yeah, so I'm looking at a little file on my hard drive right now. It says paint.net 336, and I right-click and say properties. And there's a tab in the properties that says signature list. And it shows that you stamped this in August. So I can go see Komodo, I can see .pdn LLC, and that it's been signed. If I double-click on it, I get the little prompt, which is a nice one because it says this is from you. So I know it's not some random evil paint.net. And then there's this quick little...
It's not the big, scary yellow version of the UAC dialog either.
Exactly. That's a good point. The scary yellow version of the dialog is the, this is unsigned.
Correct.
So that's how people who have shareware can avoid that dialog, is to sign their outer wrapper.
And the thing with the digital certificate or, you know, signed file is, it's not that it's not, you know, like an antivirus thing. You know, you can't promise that something that's signed isn't, you know, going to do something bad. But you can at least attribute that executable to somebody, you know, like if I sign it and the signature is holding up, then you know that the file hasn't been tampered with. So you know that the only person that could have, you know, put that code in there was me. It wasn't like, you know, some website put, you know, some random junk in there that's doing something bad to your computer. Now, that doesn't mean I'm not doing something bad. I wouldn't do something bad, but.
You know, that's really interesting because that is one of the things that is similar for SSL certificates. When my wife visits, you know, our bank, she thinks that HTTPS appearing in the address bar and having a little lock there indicates that she really is talking to that bank. And it really only indicates privacy. It doesn't indicate trust.
It's saying this hasn't been tampered with.
Right. So when, you know, a really enterprising virus writer could certainly buy a cert and then say, yes, this is evil, I promise, but it's so evil that I've signed it with a cert, which allows you to attribute it to them. Unless, of course, they stole your cert, I suppose, right?
Right. So, yeah, the other thing with the cert is that it gives something of a paper trail so that, you know, if the file hasn't been tampered with, then the only person that could have created it was the person who has that certificate. Or has the private side of that certificate, which, if it hasn't been stolen, is going to be me. So, you know, they can, I suppose, go to the records of whoever issued the certificate and figure out who created that file.
Exactly. So I double-click on this, and I get a little pop-up. I hit continue, and then there's a flash. It just takes a second, just an instant.
Mm-hmm.
And then what appears to be a PDN setup folder shows up in my app data temp. So if I go to my start run menu and I type in %temp%, you made a PDN setup folder, unzipped a bunch of stuff in there, and then this really nice dialogue pops up, this really pretty dialogue. What is the outer shell written in, and what was that flash that I saw?
All right. So like you said, you know, it's dumping a bunch of files in that PDN setup folder. So the outer shell of that is you know, your typical self-extracting executable type thing. And I'm actually using something called Nullsoft installer to create that. And you can, it's called NSI or NSIS, I think. And you can use that to create an entire setup experience, but I'm actually only using it for my self-extraction process and for checking a couple other things. Like I check to see if you're running on Windows 95 or something.
Because
you can't actually compile an EXE in Visual Studio 2008 that does that. So,
yeah, that's actually called NSIS, right? It's called the PIMP. Did you know that?
It's called what?
NSIS, Nullsoft Super PIMP Installation System.
I thought the I stood for installation. So.
Nope. Nullsoft are the guys that made Winamp, and this is the setup program that they made for Winamp. And NSIS, which is the installation system, is called the Nullsoft, that's the N, Super PIMP Installation System. They changed it to Nullsoft Scriptable Installation System because people are offended by PIMP. But PIMP stands for Plug-in Mini Packager.
Right.
So it's an acronym within an acronym. And it's a really, really tight, clean, very, very small installer. So you wrote a little tiny installer whose only job it is to look in the temp folder and then unzip itself and then run another installer.
Pretty much.
That's pretty clever. So then I'm looking at this dialog that says paint.net, and it says quick installation or custom installation. This is a WinForms application that I'm looking at?
Right. It's a WinForms app. And there's actually a little history behind the quick and the custom buttons there. It used to be that paint.net went through, and you know, using the default installer UI that was created in Visual Studio, it had, you know, hey, you know, here's your license agreement. Here, you know, where do you want to install it? What options do you want, et cetera? But most people installing the software, and I can get into a whole discussion about what I'm referring to when I say most people, they don't care about most of that stuff. So the quick option gives them, you know, basically a 2 or 3 click installation without access or without needing to look over all those, you know, sort of nerdy options. And that actually really just cleans up the UI quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's just that one option. It's next and finish at that point.
It's pretty much at that point, all you have to do is accept the ULM, and bam, it just goes and installs it with all the default options. Because most people don't really care about where it gets installed, or, you know, they just want it to use sane and default options. So that's what I give them.
Now you're a micro ISV, you know, an independent software vendor, and you're a small one because it's you. Why have a EULA at all? Is that just, did your lawyer say to do that, or what's the whole point of a EULA?
It's a general legal thing. You know, if you release some software without a EULA, then there's sort of, you know, I'm not a lawyer, of course, but you want to make sure that people realize, hey, you know, this software carries no warranties. You can't come after me for damages, but you know, in return, I'm also not charging you any money for it. So
the eight of you guys that wrote this originally, like all the different folks, yourself, Chris, Tom, Mike, all these guys that were involved, just hired a lawyer and made a little LLC. And who wrote this license?
No, the license is actually it's the MIT license.
Oh, okay,
and it's basically,
cool.
Hey, here's some software, and you can do whatever you want with it, but you can't remove our copyright. And so the other guys actually were involved before the LLC was formed. The LLC is actually just mine. It's a sole proprietorship.
Oh, I see. So I'm looking at the quick and custom options, and this application is the setup frontend.exe. So I double-clicked on the outer wrapper. That was the little Nullsoft stuff. It unzipped into a folder. I've got setup frontend.exe, and then I've got a setup frontend .exe config file. This is that little config file that tells .NET what runtime version is preferred. This one says that it uses 2.0 as the minimum, but it also has a little additional bit of information that some people may not have seen before, which is SKU equals client. So you're saying that your little installer will work with the .NET 3.5 client SKU, or what we call the client profile. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's something that you have to add in. Otherwise, if you have the client profile installed and you run a program that does not say SKU equals client, it will pop up a dialog that says, this program requires .NET 3.5 SP1. Go get it. And so if you try to install paint.NET 3.35, it will, or if you try to install on a system that has the client profile installed but not the full .NET, it will give you that weird dialog. So in 3.36, no, it was a .01 update. This was one of the things that went in there to ensure that paint.NET would install just fine if you had just the client profile installed.
Okay, because the client profile is the subset of the .NET framework. And rather than assuming that applications will work with the subset, they've added this SKU equals client attribute in order to basically declare that I know that I'll work with this
right.
subset.
You have to opt into it.
So you opt in and you work great, just fine with the smaller .NET framework. Did you have to put a lot of thought into that?
I didn't have to put much thought into it in terms of the development, but it actually did affect my installation process a bit, because I never had to include those .config files before. So now I had to go through and make sure it was included both in the MSI and in the self-extractor and in the way I did my update, because I actually copy a little exe called update monitor into the test folder while I'm running the installer when I'm doing an update. And it also needed to make sure that I also had to make sure that the .config file was copied along with that too.
Now, in this temporary folder, there's also a setup shim.exe. What is that for?
That is actually the thing that is executing setup frontend.exe. So when the MSIS wrapper extracts itself, it then runs setup shim.exe. Setup shim is written, or it's a small exe, and it's written in C. And it checks for things like Windows installer, the correct version of the .NET framework, and just to make sure that, you know, all the other files are there. And it also checks to make sure that the trusted installer service is enabled when you're on Windows Vista. Otherwise, things don't work. And I have a blog entry about that as well.
So when I look at this in Process Explorer, because sometimes Task Manager doesn't give you enough information, I'm looking at the process tree. Okay, so let's just take the listener back to where we were at the beginning. I downloaded a single executable. I double-clicked on it, and the experience was that I got a nice dialog that says quick or custom. But if I look at this in Process Explorer, I see that paint.NET 3.36.exe called something called mirror shim called paint.NET setup.exe, which called setup shim.exe, which called setup frontend. So I've got five different processes that are all sitting there waiting for setup frontend to finish its work. That seems like a lot of stuff going on.
Right. It actually does seem, it seems convoluted until I explain what each one of those does. Mm-hmm. So the setup shim is, you know, I was just talking about that. That's the main setup workflow. But then backing up to the paint.NET setup.exe, that is actually another self-extractor. Mm-hmm. And then mirror shim is another little program written in C. And the reason for that being around is because when you install, at the very end, you get that little, you know, it says optimizing performance, and then it says that little banner that says, hey, thanks for using paint.NET, you know, please donate. And you can click on that and go to the website. But then there's also room for a second banner. And right now I'm using that banner to say, hey, here's the new features in paint.NET version, you know, whatever the newest one is. Mm-hmm. But that banner is actually a PNG that's placed by MirrorShim. And the reason why I have a sort of a second or a separate wrapper to put that in is because I want to be able to build paint.NET, sign paint.NET, and then I want to be able to change that banner at a later time without having to spin up a new build, which has, you know, risk associated with it in terms of, you know, what if, you know, somebody builds differently or.
Right, you don't want to change the version number just because you want
to. I want the version number and the timestamp and everything to stay the same, where by allowing me to change that banner for, you know, maybe I, you know, have a different link that they can click on. Maybe somebody wants a customized version for, hey, okay. And I've done this before. I had different versions of the installers for Beta News and MajorGeeks.com and some other mirrors where they all got their different banner, but I only had to do the main build once. But and then I just I redid the outer wrapper.
Okay, so mirror shim is just, it just extracts that PNG. Because what I'm trying to understand is that I'm looking at five executables, and I'm thinking to myself, as the, I guess as the host here, gosh, Rick had to put a lot of work into this to possibly, you know, fix some deficiencies on the part of Microsoft. Of these five executables, which of them are Rick being really focused, you know, you personally being really focused on attention to detail, quality, and agility versus a deficiency in Visual Studio? So I think if Mirror Shim's only job is to put up a banner, I'll say that that's not a deficiency in Visual Studio. But we've got the outer wrapper, the unzipper, the check for .NET, check for the different runtimes it needs. With, you know, how many of these five executables are required because we didn't give you, we Microsoft didn't give you what you needed to make an awesome application?
It's hard to say. I mean, a lot of it just stems from the complexity of the Windows environment in general. Setup shim has to, or setup shim, like I said, is the bootstrapper or the chainer, which has to then call setup front end, which is the actual UI that you get. Mm-hmm. But before it calls setup front end, it has to make sure that certain dependencies are there, like .NET and Windows mm-hmm. Installer. And so that's probably the one that I would focus on in answering your question. That because Windows doesn't have a built-in way of me, it doesn't have a built-in way for me to be able to tag something using, like, say, some metadata to say, hey, this requires .NET. So before you run this, make sure that the user has that package.
So you're saying that you don't like the standard stuff, like, because the setup program that pops out of Visual Studio will check for .NET and make sure it downloads it and stuff.
It does check for .NET, but all you get is an error message.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
And it basically says, hey, you need .NET, and here's the URL for it. Come back when you've got it installed. And the problem there is that most users will give up.
Okay.
Because it's too difficult to go get .NET. Although it has improved recently because they put those, you know, get it now download links on the front page instead of having you to, you know, do a search for it and then wade through the download page and try to find the download button.
Well, and with I was one of the guys that worked on that to make that easier. If you build a client profile installer, you just hit setup and it'll automatically go and get the tiny setup and download it and keep going.
Right. So a lot of that is improved with .NET 3.5 SP1 as well.
Okay, cool. Because I want to, and you just took a job at Microsoft, is that right?
Right. I actually, I worked there for about 4 years, and then I kind of took the summer off, and now I'm back.
Okay. And what group do you work in?
I'm working in Windows Fundamentals.
Oh, cool. And are you going to take all this feedback about making a really awesome setup program back to the team to make sure that it's awesome for the next version?
Back to which team?
To the deployment folks, to Visual Studio tools.
I've actually met with them a few times and talked with some of those guys, and they're actually incorporating a lot of this feedback because there's sort of a long tail of freeware applications out there, which deployment of .NET, you know, they need .NET to run, but, you know, there's like a little 50 kilobyte shareware app cannot include .NET because that would balloon it to 50 megabytes.
Yeah,
but it
exactly.
also is a lot difficult for that author to, you know, make sure that the user has .NET installed.
Yeah, well, like with my little application, Baby Smash, I'm using Click Once, and I'm starting to think about things like, well, now I've got a couple of, you know, some number of thousands of people using Baby Smash. How do I upgrade them effectively? What happens if my certs expire? I haven't gone and done any of the signing ahead of time, you know. I'm starting to wonder if I'm going to paint myself into a corner.
If you want to localize or if you want to translate your program into other languages, how do you make sure that your installer is localized?
Yeah, exactly. And wouldn't you, like, I would think if I had the pressure of having something as popular as paint.net, you know, kind of hanging over me, I would think, what's the nightmare scenario? I assume that your nightmare scenario would be a lousy upgrade that would cause every or some large number of paint.net users to have to reinstall.
Right. I guess the nightmare scenario would be, so right now, the current version that's on the website only requires .NET 2.0. Mm-hmm. And so we're kind of at a known complexity in terms of installing that.
Yeah.
But now, if I want to upgrade everybody to .NET 3.5 SP1, you know, for example, if the next version of paint.NET requires it, which it will,
right.
all of my users are going to have to install the new version of .NET. And so I have all of the installation. So whenever you install something, there's a statistical failure rate. So mm-hmm. if 1% of my users can't install the new version of .NET for whatever reason, then right. that, you know, I end up with a flooded email box or just a lot of people who are now no longer users of Paint.NET.
Yeah. Now, are you going to use the client profile? Is that your goal?
Yeah. So the Paint.NET version 3.5, which I'm hoping to get out within maybe like, let's say, 2 months, mm-hmm. I've radically simplified the installation process so that it doesn't say, hey, you need to go get .NET. It actually just runs the bootstrapper for .NET Framework. The other thing I did was there are some users who are on what I call a fresh XP box, and they uh-huh. need to install Windows Installer. And it's not so much that there's a lot of people in this situation, but when they are in that situation, it's just a dreadful experience because they go to download Paint.NET, and it says, hey, you need to go get .NET. So, okay, they go to the website, and they get .NET. But then they go to try to install .NET, and it says, hey, you need to go get Windows Installer. And so they go, okay. And then
right, and people are dropping off all the way as you
continue to do
this.
Windows Installer installed.
Right.
And then suddenly they go back and try to install Paint.NET and says, hey, you need to go get .NET. And they just kind of, it's a really frustrating experience. So now I have these installers built into the zip file, and it just runs them.
Yeah, that is much cleaner. You know, I think that I don't see those issues for two reasons. Because one, I have Windows update everything for me, which I think mm-hmm. some people don't. I mean, I'm always going to my uncle's house or my cousin's house, and I'll run Windows update, and there's always something that they never clicked on, right? There's always that check that says, you know, make sure you have Windows Genuine Advantage or something that they haven't clicked on, and then I'll discover that they haven't had Windows update running successfully since April. So they don't have the latest service pack of .NET, or they don't have the latest whatever. So I mean, there are those people who keep their machines updated, and then there are those that just get stuck somewhere along the line. And then the other issue is dial-up versus broadband, right? Having ubiquitous broadband, I don't think about a 60 meg download. It doesn't mean anything to me. But if you go to New Zealand or somewhere with metered broadband, or Africa somewhere with just dial-up, then installing something simple like a little 1 meg paint program becomes a day long event to get your system up to date.
Right. So a lot of people think, well, why do I need to download 50 megs for this, 1 megabyte program? That's just, it's a paint program, and then they give up and, just use the built in stuff like paint, or, they go, for the larger programs, which they think have a better value proposition for the amount of time that they have to spend acquiring it.
Yeah, it'll be nice to get this stuff, to get 3.5 everywhere, to...
Right, so they do have that GDR release coming up, which should help a lot, actually.
Right, I'm actually going to be doing a blog post about that, about when the GDR General Distribution release, is that what it's called? What's GDR stand for?
I think it's General Distribution Release.
So we say General Distribution Release. GDR release. That's going to be coming out... in a downloadable form by the end of the year, and then it'll be up on Windows Update sometime at the beginning of the year. So I'm going to do a whole blog post about that. So when that happens, we'll start seeing rolling updates, and then we'll be able to count on people who have Vista being updated to 3.5. So that should make life a little bit easier for you as an
Although
ISV.
There is still the for programs which still have to run XP, which is quite a bit of them, you mm-hmm. still have to do the, is Windows Installer there? Is .NET there? Because
right.
the update isn't going for systems that don't have .NET anything installed.
Cool. Are you going to continue to do blog posts on how to write software right and how to get these installers correct?
I don't have any specific plans, but, I mean, these things kind of come up whenever I, get in the right mood for writing stuff. And,
Well, I really enjoy Paint.NET, and I enjoy your blog. Your blog is at blog.getpaint.net. You put a lot of really cool information up there. It's all very transparent. You talk about what your plans are, and you put up your usage statistics, how many people are hitting the site per day, what operating systems they are. It's really cool to have such a transparent sharing of information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fun to write this stuff. It's just a matter of, when do I have, whenever I get the free time to do it, I have to choose between working on Paint.net or, say, drinking beer or playing video games. And so, yeah, sometimes the latter stuff wins out.
I'm glad that you have your priorities straight. Cool. Well, thanks, Rick Brewster, for talking to me about Paint.net today. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'll see you again next week.